thinking and bold ideas. Some minds are critical, spotting every problem or landmine lurking within a plan. The genius of some others is to find a way to tunnel around these landmines. For example, a successful CEO turned venture capitalist in Tokyo has a rule he applies when listening to a startup company's management team pitch seeking funding. If all three are engineers, he doesn't entertain the business plan. He looks for diversity, knowing it takes a mix of types of intelligence to start any business, even a technical one. Bill Campbell, the former CEO of Intuit, who passed away in 2016, was one such leader who appreciated the diversity of talent requisite to build a successful company. This economics major and football coach at Columbia University was renowned for his ability to lead and guide Silicon Valley's elite technologists. Bill reflected, "Their minds can do something that mine can't. They have a genius that I don't." He communicated this respect for the intelligence of others through his actions. He readily admitted that he didn't think like they did, and that he appreciated what they brought to the table. He listened intently to the ideas and advice of those who offered this perspective that he didn't have. And he asked people to teach him what he didn't know. This rich appreciation for the genius of others is how this former football coach became a personal advisor to CEOs at Apple, Google, and many more. Ignore boundaries. In their quest to assemble the finest talent, talent magnets are blind to organizational boundaries. They see multiple forms of intelligence everywhere. Talent magnets live in a world without walls and without hierarchical or lateral restrictions. Instead, they see talent networks. You can often spot talent magnets inside organizations because they are the ones who ignore org charts. Such charts are handy for finding out who works for whom and who's in charge if something goes wrong. But these issues are of relative unimportance when you're searching for genius. As far as the talent magnets are concerned, org charts are irrelevant. Why? Because everyone works for them, or at least every person whose genius they can uncover. The mind of the multiplier works like this. If I can find someone's genius, I can put them to work. The idea is simple. Multipliers understand that people love to contribute their genius. If they put in the effort to figure out someone's genius, they have opened a pathway for that person to contribute. They can utilize them. Multipliers aren't deterred if someone doesn't officially report to them on an org chart. These leaders see an unlimited talent pool that they can draw from. Everyone works for a multiplier. For this reason, multipliers leading cross-functional projects and intercompany ventures may be in key staff roles, or they may be at the top of the org chart. The common denominator is that they look beyond boundaries for talent. A CEO of a high-tech company in Beijing was on a constant prowl for the best talent from universities and competition. At the end of the working day, he would sit outside a competitor's office in his Uber-registered car and wait to pick up employees. Once in the car together, he would strike up a conversation with them, deliberately hunting for genius. While lurking outside a competitor's office into the dark hours of the night might be extreme, it's a great example of the way talent magnets look for talent everywhere and then study that talent to uncover and unlock the real genius that lies within. Practice number two, find people's native genius. As the head of a global function inside a multinational corporation, I spent a lot of time in cross-functional meetings and on task forces. It was almost inevitable that at some point in these meetings, when things would become murky, someone would hand me the whiteboard pen, point to the front of the room, and say, "Liz, lead us through this." I'd readily jump in and do my thing and at some point hand back the pen. After a while, I started to wonder why I almost never got to be a regular meeting attendee and sit in the back of the room and check email. I thought, why do I always get asked to lead these difficult meetings? Why am I always getting put in charge when it isn't even my job? After seeing this pattern repeated over many years at work and in other group settings, I realized that I wasn't being asked to be in charge per se. It was a very particular type of in charge. I would find myself in charge when a group needed more of a facilitative leader and less of a boss. I vividly remember one of my colleagues trying to explain to me why I was always being asked to lead these types of meetings. Ben explained, "It is because you can so easily frame the issue, synthesize what people are saying, and lay out a course of action." What? I stared at him blankly, trying to decipher what he was saying. It sounded like he was telling me that I was good at breathing. It didn't strike me as a particularly big deal or something someone might find difficult. It was as easy as breathing, at least for me. What my colleagues were teaching me was that I have a native ability, something that I do both easily and freely. Look for what is native. Talent magnets know how to uncover and access the native genius of others. By native genius, I mean something even more specific than a strength or a skill that might be highly rated on a 360-degree leadership assessment. A native genius, or talent, is something that people do not only exceptionally well, but absolutely naturally. They do it easily, without extra effort, and freely, without condition. What people do easily, they do without conscious effort. They do it better than anything else they do, but they don't need to apply extraordinary effort to the task. They get results that are head and shoulders above others, but they do it without breaking a sweat. What people do freely, they do without condition. They don't need to be paid or rewarded to do it, and often don't even need to be asked. It's something that gives them inherent satisfaction, and they offer their capability voluntarily, even ardently. It is effortless, and they stand ready and willing to contribute, whether it is a formal job requirement or not. Finding someone's native genius is a key that unlocks discretionary effort. It propels people to go beyond what is required and to offer their full intelligence. Finding people's genius begins by carefully observing them in action, looking for spikes of authentic enthusiasm and a natural flow of energy. As you watch someone in action, ask these questions. What do they do better than anything else they do? What do they do better than the people around them? What do they do without effort? What do they do without being asked? What do they do readily without being paid? Label it. Native genius can be so instinctive for people that they may not even understand their own capability. Perhaps you've heard the phrase, "fish discover water last." But if people aren't aware of their genius, they are not in a position to deliberately utilize it. By telling people what you see, you can raise their awareness and confidence, allowing them to provide their capability more fully. Players for Larry Gilwicks, the now retired head coach of the almost unbeatable Highland High School rugby team, often report that he got more out of them than other coaches. Before working with Larry, John saw himself as a good athlete, but not a great one. But Larry pointed out something that changed his view of himself. John recalled, "Larry commented publicly about my speed. John was surprised when the coach started talking in front of the other guys about how fast he was." He continued, "I thought I had good speed, but not great speed. But because Larry signaled it out, it inspired me to develop a distinct self-concept. I was fast. And every time I found myself in a situation where speed was required, I remembered this, and I pushed myself beyond my limits." John not only became fast, he became really fast. By labeling his genius for him, Larry unlocked this ability for John. Like John, people's first reaction to hearing someone describe a genius of theirs can often be bemusement. You know you've hit a genius nerve when they say, "Really? Can't everyone do this?" Or, "But this is no big deal." Finding people's native genius and then labeling it is a direct approach to drawing more intelligence from them. Practice number 3. Utilize people at their fullest. Once a talent magnet has uncovered the native genius of others, he or she looks for opportunities that demand that capability. Some of these are obvious. Others require a fresh look at the business or the organization. Once they've engaged the person's true genius, they shine a spotlight on them so other people can see their genius in action. Connect people with opportunities. Courtney Caldwell was a 7th grade math teacher in her first year of teaching at the Egan Junior High School in the Los Altos School District. She had a deep and true love of math and science, as well as a penchant for innovation and a drive to experiment with new ideas. What would a typical administrator do with Courtney? Make sure she was happy? Move her to a higher grade level or give her the honors classes? Such actions would surely signal her value to the school and energize her as a teacher. Courtney's appetite for classroom experimentation and innovation caught the attention of her principal, who had been asked to recommend a teacher to pilot a blended learning solution that would integrate the Khan Academy. You see, the district had established a bold vision to revolutionize learning for all students. An assistant superintendent, Alyssa Gallagher, was assembling a pilot team. These 4 teachers, each passionate about rethinking math instruction, jumped in. As they developed new approaches to deeply integrate technology and online learning into their curriculum, they encountered many obstacles and some messy gray areas. Courtney stepped in, asking questions, exploring options, and helping others make sense of the complexity. Alyssa noticed how these messy areas seemed to bring out Courtney's natural leadership. But why? Alyssa watched her closely, noting that Courtney had a genius for navigating complexity. Somehow, the grayer the issues, the better Courtney was. After completing a wildly successful pilot, Alyssa wrangled the funding to take the new blended learning instructional strategies to the next level and spread these practices across all upper grade math classes involving over 50 teachers. She tapped Courtney to be the district math coach, spending half of her time in her own classroom and the other half guiding the other teachers' ability to implement technology in their classrooms. When these teachers encountered obstacles, Courtney helped them navigate as well. When a teacher couldn't see how to do it without a computer for each student, Courtney asked what could be done with just 5 computers. Soon they found a way to rotate students. With Courtney's coaching, teachers turned their questions into next steps until the new blended learning strategies were evident in classrooms across the entire district. By year 3, the passion to innovate had become infectious across the school. The parent community took notice and eagerly supplied additional funding for 3 full-time coaching roles that included a technology integration coach, an innovation strategies coach, and a STEM, science, technology, engineering, math, coach. With Courtney serving as the full-time STEM coach, she was now able to influence all teachers in rethinking instructional practices, not only in math, but also in science. There was so much interest in the innovation this team was driving, Alyssa organized open house events for other school leaders to come and learn how they could create blended learning environments and revolutionize learning for their students. And when they came, they had Courtney there helping them navigate the gray areas. When leaders connect people's natural passions and native genius to big opportunities, those people are used at their highest point of contribution. For Alyssa, this wasn't a lucky discovery. It was a deliberate management approach. She studied Courtney, as well as each of the other team members, noticing what each of them did naturally and freely. She then put them to work at their fullest, tackling the district's aspiration to revolutionize learning for all students. Are there people on your team who could lead a revolution if they were unleashed on the right opportunity? Are there people on your team who aren't being used at their highest? shine a spotlight. Each summer in the Sierra Mountains of California, roughly 75 teenage girls eagerly gather for an annual girls' camp, a week of fun, adventure, and camaraderie that often serves as the watershed event in their young lives. The camp is run entirely on the volunteer efforts of 60 leaders. For the last 6 years, Marguerite Hancock has served, also as a volunteer, as the camp director at the helm of this incredible group of youth and leaders. Marguerite is the executive director at the Computer History Museum and was previously a Stanford University research director. She is smart, accomplished, and extraordinarily capable, a strong leader with strong ideas of her own. One of her assistant directors said, "Marguerite is so capable, she could do virtually any aspect of girls' camp herself." But what is interesting about Marguerite isn't that she could, it is that she doesn't. Instead, she leads like a multiplier, calling forth brilliance and dedication among the other 59 leaders who make this camp a reality. Marguerite begins by building a dream team, carefully recruited for each person's individual genius. One of the assistant directors told us, "Marguerite studies people. She watches them until she figures out what they are great at. She chose her assistant directors not only for their strengths, but because we each had strengths in areas where she was weak. She then finds a place where each person's genius will shine. For some, it is working with the girls one-on-one. For another, it is managing the sports program. For another, it is leading the nightly campfire. But each role is carefully cast to draw upon the unique talents of every person on the team." Marguerite then makes it clear to each person why he or she has been selected for that role. She not only notices their talent, she labels it for them. One camp leader said, "She tells me the talent she sees in me and why it matters. She tells me why girls' camp will be better because of me and my work." But Marguerite doesn't stop there. She lets everyone else know too. It is typical for her to introduce someone to the group by saying, "This is Jennifer. She's a creative genius. We are so fortunate to have her leading our art program." With her talented cast assembled, Marguerite then goes to the back of the room, takes control of the spotlight, and begins shining it on others. She is effusive with praise, but it is never empty. Her praise of others' work is specific, and it is public. The other leaders at camp can see the direct link between their work and the success of the camp. A camp leader said, "She not only tells you that you are doing a great job, but she tells you why it matters to these girls. I know my work is appreciated." Marguerite finds other people's genius and then shines a spotlight on it for everyone to see their talent in action. What is the result? A character-building, life-changing experience for 75 young women, and also a deeply rewarding, growing experience for the 59 leaders who serve alongside Marguerite. Practice number 4, remove the blockers. Talent magnets are attractors and growers of talent and intelligence, and leaders who serve as multipliers provide both a space and the resources to yield this growth. But talent magnets go beyond just giving people resources. They remove impediments, which quite often means removing people who are blocking and impeding the growth of others. In almost every organization, there are people who overrun others, consuming the resources needed to fuel the growth of people around them. Like weeds in a garden bed, they choke the development of the intelligence around them. Get rid of prima donnas. Bloom Energy, located in the heart of Silicon Valley, had developed a fuel cell system that produces clean, reliable, and affordable energy. As venture capital firm Kleiner Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers' first green tech venture, Bloom Energy has become a leader in their industry. Leading Bloom Energy is K.R. Sridhar, renowned aerospace and environmental scientist and an energy thought leader. When Sridhar started Bloom Energy, he began with what he calls gene pool engineering. Kerr explains, A players attract other A players. Their smarts and passion make other smart, passionate people want to work here. So your first 50 employees are your most important and hardest. When Bloom Energy needed to hire their first 50 employees, there was no established green tech industry at the time. So KR broke down each technology they would require to build their energy generators and identified the leading company in this technology. He then researched and found the person inside each company that the company would least want to lose. He reached out to these people, explained the bold challenge Bloom Energy was undertaking, and recruited them to join the company. In this way, he engineered a gene pool of elite technical talent who were the best in their respective fields. He established one rule, no prima donnas. Leave your ego at the door and work as a team. He now had the talent he needed, and the work of building a team that would deliver an integrated energy technology began. Within this elite team, one technologist was particularly indispensable. Stefan, an outstanding scientist, was the world expert in the technology that was the linchpin in their solution. As the team worked, it became clear that Stefan couldn't collaborate and had become entrenched in his position about the technical direction the company should pursue. Tensions mounted in the team because the company had just committed to an important beta release in 18 months. KR pulled Stefan into his office and explained the situation, but Stefan wouldn't back down. Knowing how essential he was to the technical viability of the venture, he made it clear to KR. It was either him or the team. KR explained the options, but Stefan's ego wouldn't allow him to let go of the issue. KR contemplated the issue and the risks involved. Within the hour, he had made his decision. He chose the team. He walked Stefan to the door, then walked over to the rest of the team and explained his actions. He explained, I have put us at significant risk, but I know we have it in us to overcome this. I trust that we will get through this, but there will be significant delays. Initially, the group was silent, stunned that KR was willing to let go of their top technologist. One team member broke the silence and said, There will be no delays. We will do things we've never done before to get this done. With renewed energy, the team worked weekends and extraordinary hours. They brought in consultants with the critical expertise they lacked. They kept up the pace for 18 months while people grew to fill in the gap that was created by Stefan's departure. They delivered the product successfully, missing their original deadline by only 2 days. This incident became the foundation for how the company would operate. The best talent in the industry, but not a single prima donna. KR Sridhar accelerated the development of the intellectual assets of this company by getting rid of the prima donna who was impeding the intelligence of the whole organization. Today, Bloom Energy is thriving and is often cited as the reason Kleiner Perkins continues to expand their green tech portfolio. Individual genius can be deceptive. At first look, it would appear costly to remove one super smart player, even if she has a diminishing effect on a team. But one needs only to do the math to see the high cost of destructive genius. Our research consistently confirmed that diminishers cause people to operate at about 50% of their full intelligence and capability. Removing a highly intelligent employee or leader can be difficult, but it can have huge payoffs. On a work team of 11 people, removing a diminisher can give back the equivalent of 5 full-time people. With 10 people operating at 100%, you may lose one mind, but you gain back 5. It is a law of numbers. Leaders most often know who the blockers are. The most common mistake they make is waiting too long to remove them. Is it possible that your smartest people are impeding the smarts of your organization? And is it possible that you're waiting too long to remove the blockers? If you want to unleash the talent that is latent in your organization, find the weeds and pull them. Don't do it quietly. Let K.R. Sridhar huddle the team immediately and let them know that you've removed someone because he or she was holding back the team. Give people permission to think fully again. Get out of the way. Sometimes, a talent magnet removes the prima donna who's blocking the intelligence of others. But sometimes, the blocker is the leader him or herself. The late management guru, C.K. Prahalad, who passed away in April 2010, was one of my mentors. He once shared with me an old saying in India, "Nothing grows under a banyan tree." It provides shade and is comfortable, but it allows no sun in for growth. Many leaders are banyan trees. They protect their people, but nothing grows under them. One corporate VP had a favorite saying, quoted often and written on her door, "Ignore me as needed to get your job done." This simple mantra signaled an important trust in the judgment and capability of others. Her people knew that exercising their judgment and getting the job done rapidly was more important than placating the boss. She told new staff members, "Yes, there will be a few times when I get agitated because I would have done it differently, but I'll get over it. I'd rather you trust your judgment, keep moving, and get the job done." Talent magnets remove the barriers that block the growth of intelligence in their people. The world of the talent magnet is dynamic. Talent is drawn in by the strong gravitational pull of the talent magnet. It is then fully utilized, stretched, made continually ready for new challenges. Life with an empire builder doesn't offer the same thrill ride. It is a world of politics, ownership, and limitations. The diminisher's approach to managing talent. Multipliers operate from a belief that talent exists everywhere, and they can use it at its highest if they can simply identify the genius in people. Diminishers think, people need to report to me in order to get them to do anything. One such senior director said the only thing that was wrong with the underperforming IT division was that it reported to somebody else. He saw owning the resources himself as the primary solution. Diminishers are owners of talent, not developers of talent. Because they don't actively develop talent, people in their organizations languish and can actually regress. Here are the ways diminishers see the world and operate, and a glimpse at how these behaviors affect people and organizations. Acquiring resources. Empire builders focus their energy on acquiring resources and slotting them into organizational structures where they are visible and clearly under the command of the leader. For some leaders, this amassing of talent can become an obsession. Recall Jasper Wallace, the high-cost diminisher from the first chapter, who was obsessed with the size of his organization relative to those of his peers on the executive team. After years of building his organization with his right hand, while masking with his left hand the underlying problems, Jasper succeeded in building an empire complete with a separate office tower, customer visit center, and training campus just for his division. However, his organization had become gangly after such rapid, unrestrained growth and had acquired new problems in integration and coordination. The hole became deeper and deeper until the division was radically scaled back and folded into another group. Like Imperial Rome, the empire eventually overextended itself and collapsed under its own weight. Putting people in boxes. Divide and conquer is the modus operandi of empire builders. They bring in great talent and carve out a fiefdom for them, but they don't encourage people to step beyond these walls. Rather than give broad scope to their management team, empire builders ensure that they themselves are the point of integration. You can often spot an empire builder because he or she either operates exclusively through one-on-one meetings or runs staff meetings as an official report out from each fiefdom. One manager was known for making key decisions one-on-one rather than with his team. This fostered a covert and high-stakes game among his lieutenants. Each of them would vie for the coveted one-on-one meeting time, the last meeting on a Friday afternoon. Why? because everyone knew that he made his decisions by himself over the weekend and announced them in his staff meeting on Monday. People quickly learned that the person who got his ear last on Friday afternoon would have the most influence. His divide-and-conquer approach not only kept people in narrowly defined roles, it was a dangerous and costly way to make decisions. Letting talent languish. One way empire builders stifle their talent is by hogging the limelight for themselves. They are often prima donnas, insisting that they get maximum time on stage and that scripts are written to feature them. Whereas talent magnates give credit, empire builders take credit. Hogging the limelight is an active way empire builders hold others back, but the more insidious problem is actually what they don't do. These managers actively acquire talent, but then are passive about growing it. They are, for the most part, oblivious to the development of others. In fact, in our quantitative research, we found that developing the talent of the team was among the lowest three skills of the diminisher. They also stifle talent by not clearing away the deadwood. One diminisher we studied was notorious for draining his organization through inaction. People said he and his management team never make decisions. They didn't make waves. They just kept analyzing. Instead of firing toxic or ineffective leaders, he would slowly disable them. One observer noted, it was torture to watch one of his staff get cut off. It was like a child pulling off the legs of a spider one by one and then watching it hobble away. When leaders play the role of empire builder, they bring in great resources, but they underutilize them because they fundamentally undervalue them. They continue to operate in a one-brain, many-hands organizational model that stunts the growth of both intelligence and talent around them. Diminishers build organizations where people go to die. This is why diminishers are costly to organizations. The assets in their portfolio don't increase in value. Becoming a talent magnet. The promise of a multiplier is that they get twice the capacity, plus a growth dividend from their people as their genius expands under the leadership of the multiplier. Let's now look at a few starting points for becoming a talent magnet. How do you create this cycle of growth and acceleration inside your organization? You can kickstart the cycle by learning to be a genius watcher and spotting the native genius of everyone around you. Imagine, if you will, a corporate manager genius watching, observing each member of her team and noticing what they do naturally and freely. Instead of taking inventory of who has done their job, she asks, how can I use their natural genius to get our most important jobs done? Or consider a new high school principal who, having practiced genius watching on his own team for 2 weeks, now finds himself spotting genius everywhere. While attending a mandatory school district meeting, he notices Ellen, a curriculum coach from a rival high school, who points out a myriad of pitfalls that the schools might encounter in adopting a new program. Her knack for bringing potential problems to the surface had seemed annoying in previous meetings, but now it appears useful. He wonders who on his team has the pitfall finder genius and how we can use it. If you want to get better at seeing, naming, and using the genius of everyone around you, try the following three experiments. Each is a critical skill for the would-be talent magnet. Appendix E in the included PDF has full worksheets for conducting many of the multiplier experiments referenced throughout the book. Number one, name the genius. Experiment number one, name the genius. Kickstart this cycle by tapping into someone's native genius and unlocking hidden reserves of discretionary effort. You can start by finding the native genius, that which they do easily and freely, of each individual on your team. Or you might be selective and focus on an individual you're struggling to work with, or trying to understand how to utilize. Perhaps you've been wishing you could remove this person from the team. Instead of asking, is this person smart? Try asking, in what way is this person smart? You might discover something that breaks the cycle of assumptions. Once you have some practice identifying native genius in both yourself and others, you can conduct this exercise as an entire management team so that each team member understands the native genius of each person on the team. Experiment number two, supersize it. Try sizing someone's job the way you shop for shoes for a young child. How does the wise parent decide what size to buy? They start by measuring the child's foot, and then they buy a pair that's a size too big. And how does the parent respond when their child tries on those shoes, awkwardly parading down the store aisle, complaining that the shoes feel weird and too big and that their feet are flopping around in them? The parent reassures them, "Don't worry, you'll grow into them." Try supersizing someone's job. Assess their current capabilities and then give them a challenge that is a size too big. Give an individual contributor a leadership role. Give a first-line manager more decision-making power. If they seem startled, acknowledge that the role or responsibility might feel awkward at first. Then step back and watch them grow into it. Experiment number three, let go of a superstar. Perhaps the only thing harder than watching an A-plus player leave your team is knowing that you were the one who encouraged them to move on. While most managers try to retain their top players, the best leaders know when it's time to let them go. They recognize when a superstar has outgrown his or her environment. Like parents watching their child head off to college, they are full of mixed feelings, but they are clear that the young person needs a bigger stretch and a new test. Is there someone on your team who needs a bigger challenge, but won't continue to grow unless you let them go? Up and to the right. Sue Siegel, former president of Affymetrics and an extraordinary multiplier, reflected on her pillar experiences as a leader. She said, "My best moments were when team members would call me after accomplishing some tough goal or overcoming a huge hurdle. They were usually tired, but they were brimming with enthusiasm, having grown through the challenge. These moments were exhilarating for them and me." The people who worked for Sue indeed described the time as a highlight of their career. Talent magnets encourage people to grow and leave. They write letters of recommendation, and they help people find their next stage to perform on. And when people leave their group, they celebrate their departures and shout their success to everyone. You see, these celebrations become their best recruiting tool. Jack and Susie Welch wrote, "The best thing about being a preferred employer is that it gets you good people, and this launches a virtuous cycle. The best team attracts the best team, and winning often leads to more winning. That's a ride that you and your employees will never want to get off." Talent magnets create a cycle of attraction that is exhilarating for employer and employee alike. Their organizations are coveted places of employment, and people flock to work for them knowing the talent magnet will stretch them, grow them, and accelerate their careers. It is a thrill ride with the speed and exhilaration of a roller coaster, but one that, like the revenue chart of every CFO's dreams, moves constantly up and to the right. Chapter 2 Summary: The Empire Builder versus the Talent Magnet. Empire builders bring in great talent, but they underutilize it because they hoard resources and use them only for their own gain. Talent magnets get access to the best talent because people flock to work for them, knowing they will be fully utilized and developed to be ready for the next stage. The four practices of the talent magnet. Practice number one, look for talent everywhere. Appreciate all types of genius. Ignore boundaries. Practice number two, find people's native genius. Look for what is native. Label it. Practice number three, utilize people to their fullest. Connect people with opportunities. Shine a spotlight. Practice number four, remove the blockers. Get rid of prima donnas. Get out of the way. Becoming a talent magnet. Experiment number one, name the genius. Experiment number two, supersize it. Experiment number three, let go of a superstar. Leveraging resources. Empire builders. What they do? Hoard resources and underutilize talent. What they get? They get a reputation as the person A players should avoid working for, the place you go to die. They get underutilized people whose capability atrophies. They get disillusioned A players who don't reach out to other A players. They get a stagnation of talent where disillusioned A players quit and stay. Talent magnets. What they do? Attract talent and deploy it at its highest point of contribution. What do they get? They get a reputation as the person A players should work for, the place you go to grow. They get fully utilized people whose genius continues to expand. They get inspired A players who attract other A players into the organization. And they get a flow of A players attracting other A players as they move up and out of the organization. Unexpected findings. Number one, both talent magnets and empire builders attract top talent. What differentiates them is what they do with the talent once it's in the door. Number two, talent magnets don't run out of talent by moving their people onto bigger, better opportunities because there is a steady stream of talent wanting to get into their organization. Chapter 3, The Liberator. The only freedom that is of enduring importance is the freedom of intelligence, that is to say, freedom of observation and of judgment. John Dewey. Michael Chang began his career in a small consulting company. As a young manager, he was forceful with his opinions and veered toward brutal honesty. Over time, he saw its damaging effects and reflected, it certainly doesn't get people to blossom. Michael began to realize that when you become the leader, the center of gravity is no longer yourself. He had a mentor who taught him that the leader's job is to put other people on stage. As he began to shift his focus to others, he became less controlling and learned to give people space. Where he used to jump in and do it for them, he learned to hold back. He found that not only do other people step up, they often surprise you by producing something better than you would have. As he has grown as a leader, he's learned to be direct without being destructive. He's learned how to create an environment where he could tell the truth and have others grow from it. Today, this manager is the CEO of a thriving startup company. He has developed several practices that give space for others to do their best work. He makes a conscious effort to create a learning environment by recruiting people with a strong learning orientation and by admitting his own mistakes often. This gives others permission to make and recover from their own mistakes. When offering his opinion, he distinguishes hard opinions from soft opinions. Soft opinions signal to his team, here are some ideas for you to consider in your own thinking. Hard opinions are reserved for times when he holds a very strong view. Here's a leader who began his career headed down the path of a management tyrant, but became a multiplier and liberator himself. The accomplishment is significant when you consider that the path of least resistance for most smart, driven leaders is to become a tyrant. Even Michael said, "It's not like it isn't tempting to be tyrannical when you can." Let's face it. Corporate environments and modern organizations are the perfect setup for diminishing leadership and have a certain built-in tyranny. The org charts, the hierarchy, the titles, the approval matrices skew power toward the top and create incentives for people to shut down and comply. In any hierarchical organization, the playing field is rarely level. The senior leaders stand on the high side of the field, and ideas and policies roll down to the lower side. Policies, established to create order, often unintentionally keep people from thinking. At best, these policies limit intellectual range of motion as they straitjacket the thinking of the followers. At worst, these systems shut down thinking entirely. These hierarchical structures make it easy for tyrants to reign. And in their reign, these managers can easily suppress and constrain the thinking of the people around them. Consider the fate of Kate, a corporate manager who began her career as an intelligent, driven, and creative collaborator. She was promoted into management and moved quickly from frontline manager to vice president and is now running a large organization. She sees herself as an open-minded, creative thought leader. But in a recent 360-degree feedback report, she was shocked to find that her people don't seem to agree. As she read the report, she could see that her strong ideas were hampering the creativity and capability of her people. And her drive for results was making it difficult for people to be truthful and take risks. One of the comments read, "It is just easier to hold back and let Kate do the thinking." Kate was stunned. Every step she had taken up the corporate ladder made it that much easier for her to unintentionally kill other people's ideas. The nature of the hierarchy had skewed power, making every conversation Kate had with a subordinate inherently unequal because the playing field was tilted in her favor. An off-the-cuff remark could be translated as a strong opinion and turned into policy for her division. If she rolled her eyes or sighed sharply after someone's comment, everyone in the room noticed and avoided saying anything they thought would produce the same reaction. She had more power than she had realized. She had become an accidental diminisher. I suspect I saw too many military movies in college because they all started to look alike. Inevitably, there would be a scene where an army private who was privy to some debacle would stand at attention and nervously appeal to the commanding officer, "Permission to speak freely, sir?" I could never understand this strange custom and why someone would need permission to speak freely. After all, I was in college where thinking and speaking freely were the norm. However, after several years in the workplace, I clearly understood. Formal hierarchies suppress the voices and often ideas of those at the bottom. Multipliers, by contrast, liberate people from the oppressive forces within corporate hierarchy. They free people to think, to speak, and to act with reason. They create an environment where the best ideas surface and where people do their best work. They give people permission to think. The tyrant versus the liberator. Multipliers create an intense environment in which superior thinking and work can flourish. Tyrants create a tense environment that suppress people's thinking and capability. A tense leader. Jenna Healy was a senior vice president of field operations for a large telecommunications company. Even at 5'3", she had a way of towering over the people who worked for her. Jenna was a serious leader and a smart manager with strong experience, but she was an absolute tyrant. Her colleagues told us, She created an environment of hysteria. She created fear all around her and intimidated and bullied people until she got what she wanted. Her primary approach to leadership was, "What more can you do for me?" When one of her managers said, "She's a bit like the ruthless Miranda Priestly in The Devil Wears Prada," I got the picture immediately. Not only was Jenna a bully, but she struck at random. It was hard to predict what would set her off and who would be the next victim. One person recalled, "You felt like you could be the next guy. I was stressed, on the edge, and at risk around her." Her colleagues joked, "There needs to be a storm warning system for Jenna. People need to know when it's time to duck and cover." Jenna's quarterly management meeting in Denver was one such time. Jenna had gathered a cross-functional team to review the state of the business in the U.S. market. It was a typical business review, with each function in turn presenting its state of the business. After several presentations, Daniel, the manager of the information technology team, began his presentation by showing the managers the data for how their field service staff was utilizing the IT tools that his team had built for them. He then inquired, "In light of these numbers, I wonder if the service teams are taking advantage of the tools that already exist." Based on Jenna's reaction, you would have thought he had just told her that her team was stupid and lazy. She snapped, "You have no idea what you're talking about," and then berated him in front of the group. The argument got heated and lasted for an uncomfortable 10 minutes. When somebody finally signaled that the group was overdue for a break, there was a rapid dash for the door. But Daniel stayed in an attempt to hold his ground against Jenna. With everyone out in the hall, the argument escalated irrationally and turned to shouting. While things were heated in the conference room, outside in the hall, there was a distinct chill in the air. Everyone in the hall was quietly cheering Daniel for standing up to the bully. But those who were next up to present were frozen with fear, and you could feel the tension. The fortunate ones, who had already given their presentations, wished luck to their ill-fated colleagues. These remaining presenters began scrambling to adjust their presentations, taking out anything controversial that might incite the already irascible leader. The presenters watered down their presentations, and they got through the meeting, but nothing much was really said, and nothing much was accomplished. Jenna's organization made modest progress, but continually failed to hit its revenue and service quality targets. Eventually, when she went too far and bullied one of their partners, she was exited instantly from the organization. Jenna went to another company as COO. She lasted 2 weeks before being demoted. 6 months later, she was asked to leave. People hold back around leaders like Jenna. Such tyrants shut down the flow of intelligence and rarely access people's best work. Everywhere they go, they find people doing less than they really can. It is no wonder they resort to intimidation, thinking it will get them what they no doubt want, great thinking and great work. But intimidation and fear rarely produce truly great work. Let's look at another senior sales and services leader. An intense leader. Robert Enslin is the president of global customer operations for SAP AG, the global software giant. Originally from South Africa, he speaks with a calm confidence. Robert is highly respected with a reputation as a fair, consistent sales leader who grows organizations and delivers results. Robert operates as a peer to everyone he works with and is accessible to all. One of his managers said of him, "He is very good at disarming you. He's a commoner, one of us. Even if you work 3 levels below him, he still wants to know what you think." As a result, people are more transparent around him. They don't feel like they have to tell him what he wants to hear. This approachability creates safety for the people around Robert. And that safety is what allows him to run a massive sales organization with no surprises. Several years ago, Robert was asked to take over the Japanese subsidiary for SAP to address some very specific sales performance issues. When he met with his new leadership team in Japan for the first forecast meeting, he could see the forecasting process was in complete disarray. Instead of playing the authoritarian, judging their failure, and dictating his solution, Robert restrained himself and started a learning process. He helped them realize the limitations of the current process and the advantages of a new approach. He then drew on their knowledge of the Japanese business and asked them, "How can we take this to the next level?" He created space for the team to try new approaches and fix the problem themselves. He stayed with them on the issue for months until they could run a forecast process that delivered solid, predictable results for the business. Robert was known for his collegial approach and calm consistency, but this was tested when he took over the North American business in 2008, just as the global economy was melting down. As spending was locking up and large capital purchases were being put on hold, executives everywhere were beginning to panic. You could feel the tension as you walked through the halls of SAP's Newton Square office in Philadelphia. There was even more tension one step past the glass door as you entered the executive conference room. Inside another conference room, Robert and his new management team were assembled to plan their sales strategy in this new economic environment. Every person on his team knew that Robert had been meeting with the senior executives and was under a lot of pressure. They came to the meeting prepared to feel their share of the pain. After all, this was a sales organization. But Robert was calm and constant even amid this chaos. His team began to wonder if he hadn't been reading the news or had skipped the executive meetings. He opened the meeting by acknowledging the severity of the economic issues, but suggested they put them aside. He kept the team focused on the issues within their control. He then asked, "What can we do to differentiate ourselves right now?" Safe within their sphere of expertise and control, the group worked to identify the value proposition that would help them position their solutions in the turbulent climate. After the discussion, he asked, "How can we help people consume our products so that they get the most economic value?" Again, the group could wrestle this question down and put together a plan. His team said, "We know he must have been getting pressure from up higher, but he didn't create anxiety for us. He remained calm and just never wigged out. He doesn't create whiplash for his people." Another SAP executive said, "During a crisis, he asks even more questions. The same type of questions that force you to really think through a situation, just more of them. You feel his stealthy hand guiding decisions." Robert's calmness is not synonymous with softness. He is as intense and focused as any other successful sales executive. The difference is where his focus lies. His fellow executive continued, "He's hard on issues, but easy on people. You believe that he has your back, so when you inevitably make a mistake, he'll help you fix it first and not lash out at you. There's an aura that we're in this together, which means the stress is distributed among the larger group so one person doesn't disproportionately feel it." A member of his leadership team said, "With Robert, it isn't about him. He makes it about you and about getting the best work from you." Robert's steady hand and open environment provide sanity and stability to an organization that could have easily spun into crisis. Tense versus intense. Tyrants create a tense environment that is full of stress and anxiety. Liberators, like Robert on the other hand, create an intense environment that requires concentration, diligence, and energy. It is an environment where people are encouraged to think for themselves and also where people experience a deep obligation to do their best work. Diminishers create a stress-filled environment because they don't give people control over their own performance. They operate as tyrants, overexerting their will on the organization and causing others to shrink, retreat, and hold back. In the presence of a tyrant, people try not to stand out. Just consider how people operate under the rule of a political dictator. Tyrants get diminished thinking from others because people only offer the safest of ideas and mediocre work. While a tyrant creates stress that causes people to hold back,